I'm Norman Gilliland. Welcome to the Midday, and welcome back, Lynn Harrell. Pleasant to have you here.
It's great to be here. Things are jumping here in the studio. I can't wait. First of all, I want to pledge $150 to the drive for the Jonathan Winters Carnival of Animals.
Well,
those of you
who've
pledged $10, $15, $20, or $25, you're probably feeling guilty now for what this program brings you. So pick up the phone and pledge again. Come on, let's make this drive work. This is an extraordinary station. Thank you.
Wow. Not only does he play the cello like a virtuoso, but he does pledge pitches like a virtuoso. We might have you back more often.
I wish.
It's been a few years. I know the first time you came into this particular studio was 2002, but you've been here since then, too.
Yes, I think so.
A couple of years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, I was told that the woman remembered when I was here was 4 years ago because my son hadn't been born yet, and he's 4 years old now.
Well, we all have our markers, don't we?
Yes.
And this time around, you're here to play with the Madison Symphony. This would be Friday night at 7:30, Saturday night at 8, and Sunday afternoon at 2:30. And the program includes Rossini's Overture, The Barber of Seville, the Sibelius Second Symphony, which was really a landmark symphony of the early 20th century. And your part in particular is the Lalo Cello Concerto in D minor, which is a big virtuosic piece that we don't get to hear that often for some reason.
Yes, I think since Dvorak wrote the great cello concerto in 1896, it's sort of fallen out of the repertoire, but it's got operatic kind of drama, the operatic kind of drama where you come across a daughter that you haven't seen 25 years, you're a hunchback, your lover has forsaken you, so you jump off a cliff. This sort of drama is in this Lalo Cello Concerto, and Casals used it as his debut in 1896 because Dvorak hadn't published his yet.
Oh, that's fascinating. And obviously, well, we're going to hear a little bit later, I think time will permit, a recording that you made of the Lalo probably about 25 years ago. It's always fun to compare an artist's performance then with what he or she says now.
Yes, it's always so different, but it's amazing that I think, at least for myself, that the artistic response to the music's demand feels the same, but how it manifests is quite changed.
And so much of that has to do with just life, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Well, you know, we'll be making sure that you get your Jonathan Winters Carnival of the Animals CD. You are no stranger to that piece, as back, almost 20 years ago now, you recorded, among other pieces, one of the most famous little cello pieces comes from the Carnival of the Animals. It's the Swan. And you recorded it with pianist Bruno Canino. And it sounds like this.
Thank you.
The Swan from Carnival of the Animals, with Lynn Harrell as the cellist and Bruno Canino as the pianist. And it's 12:15, about 15 minutes or so until today's 12:30 quiz question. And I was mentioning that, well, in conjunction with Lynn's pledge of $150 for the Jonathan Winters Carnival of the Animal thank you gift that we have, I mentioned that Joan Baez had made a pledge one time when she was passing through town, and you tell me you've got a CD you're working on with her.
Yes, with many other pop artists, but it's very exciting. It's for the heartbeats.org foundation that my wife and I founded for children in need around the world. We're part of the musical ambassadors of Save the Children Foundation, and Joan agreed to come on the album, and my track is right next to hers. So although I haven't met her yet, she's been a hero of mine artistically for so many years.
Well, I have the distinction of having a guitar that she autographed. It was not my guitar when she autographed it, but speaking of benefits, I bought it, you know, as a kind of a benefit thing, and it is sort of fun to play the occasional Joan Baez song on it. So these things do cross over, don't they?
Yes, and the quality of her voice and her esprit are just haunting. You listen to her sing a song, and you're thinking about it hours later. It's just remarkable.
So what are you playing for that CD?
I'm playing Song of the Birds by so-called Casals, but Joan recorded it many years ago, a vocal arrangement, and it's not a Catalan folk song at all. This just means you shouldn't trust a cellist.
Yeah. Well, Casals, yeah, he had a reputation for being, a colorful character, let's put it that way.
Yes, indeed. He probably was one of the first people to play the Saint-Saëns Swan, because he was born in 1876. Saint-Saëns didn't want that piece to be published, because he knew already that the Swan was going to be so popular, and he was furious that he'd be remembered for a three-minute piece. The fact is, of course, it's a very beautiful, descriptive piece.
It is, and that whole Carnival of the Animals is a lot of fun, with or without the poetry of Ogden Nash, or it's been done by other poets. Poets too since then.
Oh yes, and we did a version recently with the Angeli Chamber Ensemble that my wife and I founded. You'll hear about them later, folks. But with an updated version with these two young actors, and it was just so funny and so witty and marvelous.
You have a brand new CD. I know it took me about the last 10 minutes just to open it up, so it has to be pretty new, and it has a great combination of things on it. C.P.E. Bach and also Haydn and Boccherini, who was, of course, no stranger to writing for the cello. And then maybe less expected, François Couperin.
Yes, Couperin, of course, was Le Grand, because there were a number of Couperins like there were a number of Bachs. But this little transcription by a 19th century virtuoso cellist in Paris of pieces for concert are particularly descriptive. The second movement, the Sicilienne, is rollicking and very beautiful, and there's some echo effects that, for once, you take time to listen for the echo. And then the third movement is imitating of trumpets, and it's this new album with this wonderful ensemble that my wife and I chose of the greatest players in the LA movie theater studios.
Here they are, from François Couperin Le Grand. Thank you. Presence there, don't you? The cello. It's easy for people, myself included, to underestimate the power of some of those stringed instruments until you're right next to them.
Yes, well, they are amplifying boxes, really. That's what they are. But, of course, the amplification is grossly less than it would be for a trombone or a trumpet. But the cello is a philosophical instrument. It's one that has music of the insides of the soul. It can't brandish great virtuosity in such an overt way as the violin or the piano, but it has great meaning. Great sagacity.
You haven't recorded very much Baroque music, have you, over the years? At least not that I've seen. It seems to be more later things.
Yes, mostly later things. But I am just about to embark on a DVD, CD compilation of the 6 cello suites of Bach.
I wondered when you'd get to that.
Yeah, I recorded it in 84 or 85, and I'm re-recording them, and I'm so pleased because my interpretation has grown a great deal, and I realize what a fool I was back in 85.
Well, we were talking about Pablo Casals a minute ago, and they were really important in his life, weren't they?
Yes, and generally Bach was for Casals. But he was the very first one, really, to start playing those pieces more than just exercises and learning how to play the instrument better. He took them very much to heart as great works of art. And the more one plays them and listens to them and listens to that great composer, J.S. Bach, one starts to realize that they are quite remarkable.
Well, the advantage of playing a cello as opposed to, say, a piano is that you don't have to think maybe quite so much about original instrumentation. In other words, your cello could be older, could have been made before Bach was born anyway, or when Bach was a young man, and so it would be by default, it would be an original instrument, but do you have to do different things with bowing when you're playing by different kind of bowing?
Well, some people are members of the authentic movement, which has become very strong, but which most recently has, for Baroque and classical music, started to be just another way. And I'm very glad for that, because we can't really know for sure what a composer really wanted to hear in his head, because it's tied up to his own time. For instance, the time today is computerized, and when people win races by a hundredth of a second. Back in Bach's day, you might get a letter from 50 miles away 2 weeks later or 3 days later.
Or not at all.
So the whole concept of the passage of time was completely different. So how to play the way the composer intended is more the trick, and the way the composer intended is the effect on an audience, and the effect has to do with whose ears there are. 19th century, 18th century ears, or 21st century.
Do we know why Bach even wrote those suites?
Not really, no. He wrote them just perhaps as an exercise. He probably played the cello a bit himself, and he was, of course, a virtuoso on the organ and piano. So it was It's shrouded in mystery, but there's no composer who doesn't have as much mystery about him as J.S. Bach, because he just lived in one place. The obituary in the 1756 Lexicon of Musicians is about four lines for J.S. Bach and three pages for Telemann.
Who was, of course, his friend and,
yes,
colleague in some ways, too.
Yes, and Telemann taught some of Bach's children. He's had 20, yeah, but only seven survived infancy.
I think Telemann was the godfather of one or two of the Bach sons, in fact.
Yes.
So they had this close relationship, but Bach just didn't have what I'll call, for want of a better term, the commercial leanings that some of the Telemann and certainly Handel had.
Yes. No, he just was writing music for the glory of God. And whether he was really 100% a believer is not really... not important, certainly, anymore. But he was even thought of it during the day that he was like the Newton of music. I asked a composer, why didn't anyone finish The Art of the Fugue, Bach's last work? And he said, well, it is a reversed mirror double four quartet counterpoint. I said, well, isn't there anybody who could have done that? Schoenberg? No. He said,
because counterpoint is itself, that is kind of the first hurdle that a person studying music theory has to get over. There's a story from the University of Wisconsin about Ornstein, who taught here 100 years ago or so, the father of Leo Ornstein, and he was taken to task for giving the highest grade of like 47 in counterpoint, and he said, well, I myself would only get about a 65. Bach would get 100.
Yes.
So people tend to approach Bach's counterpoint with great humility. It's kind of like trying to write a Shakespeare character.
Yeah, or understand the theory of relativity. Yes, it's counterpoint, folks, is more than one musical line going at the same time. There's a wonderful joke in Verdi's Falstaff where one character steps out of the front of the quartet because everyone's singing at the same time at different point of view. He says, if you'd only speak one at a time, I'd understand you. It's a very funny moment. But in music, you can have different musical lines going on at the same time, and we can decipher them and understand them. Well, that's hard to do.
You're going to be playing how many concerts this year?
It used to be around 60, but it's dropped down because of the financial crisis. And also, I want to be home with my children, 7 and 4. So it's about 30.
Now, you started playing cello not at a terribly early age. You were, I think, more than 7, right?
Yes, I was 8, 9.
You waited until you were 8 or 9.
Yeah.
And was, I have to ask then, are you looking for signs of cello ability in your children yet?
No. No, I feel as though, you know, there's that advertisement of a guy with a big metal ball chained to his leg. The cello is wonderful. I love the cello. I couldn't live without it. But, I hope they have a life without having the burden of carrying, learning to play a cello. My daughter wants to be a rock star anyway.
Oh, rock star, okay. Well, then you have roadies who can carry all of your accessories.
That's right. And the guitar is much less cumbersome than a cello.
Back with Lynn Harrell, and we're going to hear a recording that he made 25 years ago or so of the very piece that he's performing with the Madison Symphony this weekend. I should mention before I forget that you can get tickets to the concert if you call 258-4141. That's the number at Overture where the concert is transpiring. Well, Lynn, in the second movement of this concerto, we have a lot of things going on. You said it's a sort of operatic in quality, as if some kind of narrative going on. So what happens in the intermezzo, which then turns into an allegro presto?
Yes, well, it's very operatic, and I will let the listener's imagination wander to conjure up a situation. It starts sadly and forlornly, and singing over and over again a phrase, dee-da-da-da-da, if only I'd known now what I knew, what I didn't know then. And then this presto part is a delightful, quick Spanish dance that comes and then disappears. And we have even more of the sadness, and then the presto again, reiterates itself, and it dies in a whisper at the end. It's very, very much a potboiler operatic movement.
With Lynn Harrell as the cellist, this is the Berlin Radio Symphony led by Ricardo Schei.
Thank you.
Norman Gilliland here, back with Lynn Harrell. And Lynn Harrell is in town to play with the Madison Symphony, the Lalo Cello Concerto in D minor. We just heard a little piece of that, and we've also been hearing from his latest CD. And why, Lynn, is it called The Known Unknowns?
Well, they're known composers, but there are pieces that don't get played all that much. There is, of course, a very famous piece on that album, discovered in 1960 in the back shelves of a Prague library, the Haydn C major cello concerto.
Sure, yes.
Which I make a very funny cadenza in, which has Mexican hat dance, the Beethoven violin concerto, Schubert Ninth Symphony, the Farewell Symphony of Haydn, and the Surprise Symphony of Haydn. So it's a jolly fun piece.
I can't wait to hear that one.
It's a spectacular album. It's one of the best albums I've ever made.
And I was unaware that Couperin, who I think of usually as being a fairly, what would be the word, controlled composer, 18th century French composer, has a piece called Le Diable.
Yes, the devil. This is a concept of a guy who does all bad things all the time, but somehow doesn't have any problems with guilt. He's having a great time. This, of course, interested the greatest musical minds of history. Mozart and Stravinsky also were just very fascinated with this idea of not having any bad feelings when you do something bad. So this is the Dance of the Devil, and Couperin uses some of that counterpoint we were talking about earlier, where musical lines are juxtaposed and following each other very close at hand. So for an 18th century individual, this is chaos. And of course, hell is supposed to be very chaotic, while heaven is very, I guess, clean and pristine and organized. No socks on the floor there. But this is a jolly fun movement.
Devil in just under 2 minutes. That was quite a feat of virtuosity. How did you find that piece?
It was one of the very first pieces I played. My Aspen debut when I was 12 years old.
No kidding.
I played the Pièce en Concert. And my cello teacher, who had survived Auschwitz in the Holocaust, taught that to me. And he would dance when I would start to play this Era of the Devil. And I just found it so much fun as an 11-year-old that I realized that from his actions that music was an expression of all things human, not only soul and the inner introspection of one's feelings, but dancing and shouting for joy and jumping for joy.
So much so often the dancing is overlooked, isn't it, as a component of much instrumental music. We forget that, yeah, these are dance movements, so many of them.
Yes, Stravinsky felt so strongly about this that he said that music that doesn't either sing or dance doesn't interest me. And I subscribe to that.
Well, it's been a great pleasure having you here today. I look forward to the concerts and hearing more from you as you produce CDs and concertize, and perhaps stop by here too.
I love being at the station.
Well, it's a great pleasure having you here, Lynn Harrell.